in the tradition of literature, we're all interacting with each other. So if you sit down in one of our workshops and you pick up a pencil or a pen and you write a poem or a piece of prose, by the very fact that you're doing that, whether you ever become famous or not, you are part of that stream of literature. You just are. And so to me, that's like super exciting. That's one of the things that I remind myself of when I write in my little garage office in the early morning darkness. Like, I'm part of this stream, man. That's so exciting. You know, underground writing's origins really go back to something that's very personal, which was not only my own writing, but the death of my father in 2000 and writing a series of stories, linked short stories about our family. And I did that over the course of a year after his death. And what I found at the end was that I had really worked through all the trauma and had an artistic experience that blended the artistry and the traumatic and writing through that and the therapeutic and the empowerment and just all the things that really, whether the elite artist community will admit it or not, all of that's woven into our art throughout history. And so that really set the foundation of what became underground writing. Then there was a kind of a long gestation period. In 2006, I discovered a book called True Notebooks by Mark Salzman. He is a memoirist, novelist, writer, and he spent a year teaching with Inside Out Writers down in Los Angeles. And they have a creative writing program that works with Los Angeles County Juvenile Detention, which is about 7,000 to 8,000 youth incarcerated there. They run about 30 to 35 workshops a week. And I found the book just like transformative. And that kind of stuck with me. And then I did various internships, a few failed attempts at doing this sort of thing in community settings. And I graduated from an MFA program from University of British Columbia in 2015. And after this long gestation period, I found myself the day after graduation talking to a guy named Sean Thompson, Skagit County Juvenile Detention Manager, and proposing this idea of what has become underground writing. And he was all for the idea. And that was kind of the initial kind of outset of what we're doing now, was that meeting in May of 2015.
So there are some places where you go in and talk to people and those people are incarcerated. There are other places where they're not. In each location, is it a different approach in terms of how you lead a class or a discussion?
It might vary, not completely different, but it might vary a bit. One thing would be what literature we're bringing in to a site. So our program, we really are focused on bringing in good literature from the whole of the tradition, from ancient to modern texts, including sometimes we bring in writing from students at other sites so that different students can experience the other sites. And so we might vary, like if I'm going into a site of incarceration, I often will bring in writers who have experienced that background. Like, let's say someone like Etheridge Knight or someone like Jimmy Santiago Baca, who have at one time in their lives, whether they're still living or not, they experienced incarceration themselves. That's really important for those students to see that, oh, here's someone that experienced something similar to me, and they went on and did this. Like, that's really kind of a transformative experience for them, particularly for the students in juvenile detention, to say, oh, Jimmy Santiago Baca was in juvenile detention, and then he went on to prison as an adult, and that's where he discovered his love of reading and writing, and became an author, and now he's a well-established author, and he often will go back into juvenile detention and teach, you know, kind of like we're doing here. But I think our workshop, we have a basic format of a free write at the beginning to get things warmed up, and a guided free write at the end where the student interacts with, like, how was my experience in here and what did I learn from my own writing? Because we want that connection, like, I learned something or enjoyed something through my own writing. So you have those two end caps, and then in between there you have two or three pieces of literature that you'll discuss We read them together. We discuss them together. We affirm the students' ideas about them.
What do you mean when you say affirm their ideas?
Sure. Like we might be talking about a poem and a student will say something about the poem that they've noticed or like. You kind of jump on that as an opportunity to say, like, that's great, or I hadn't thought of that, or like, you know, I've read this poem 10 times. I never thought that's a really good point. And you can kind of see in their eyes, like, whoa, I just said something really cool, or like, I just told him something he didn't know, like that kind of realization. The thing is, when we say that, when our teaching writers say that, when I say that, it's genuine, right? One of the things I enjoy about doing this work is the fact that although I benefited greatly from the Academy and I love it, I love teaching outside it, because I think the students grasp literature and creative writing in ways that you can sense that the writing that they're doing or the literature or how they're engaging in it, it just means so much more to them, like more to their life. It's like a matter, I don't know if I could say it's a matter of life and death, literally, maybe in some cases, you know, as far as like someone's in a dark place, maybe even suicidal. I mean, we have students that struggle with that. And here's something that they can grasp onto, and they're being affirmed for, and it's a wonderful experience. Now that can happen inside the classroom too. I'm just saying in our context, it feels more apparent, and you can kind of get a sense of that. And I think there's a lack of posturing, there's a lack of kind of academic rhetoric, where we can just talk about this poem as real people. We don't have to kind of talk about this theory or that theory, and those are important. I think those are really important. I love talking about theoretical things, but I love being on the ground level and just talking person to person about literature. Whether we're talking about, I brought the first couple pages of Dante's Inferno into juvenile detention. It was great. You know, I was like, here's a narrator, and the poet narrator is talking about like he's come to a place in his life, feels totally trapped and in a dark wood. And he's thinking about what's happened before and what's happening next. And he's really kind of tense about this. And all the kids were like, yeah, they're right there. That's where they are.
It can be kind of a scary thing to share something that you've written with even just one other person, let alone to, you know, a larger group. How do you create a feeling of trust where they're able to share?
Some of this, like we talk about in our team of teaching writers, and I use that term because all the teachers are writers, and so that's an important facet of our program. But in our teaching writers group, we talk about empathy and compassion and connecting with the students of all ages. That said, there's not a list that one goes through in one's head about like, okay, now to connect with this student, first I have to do this, and second I have to do this, because it's all happening so fast, in a sense, so fast in the workshop. I think it has to be an embodied awareness that you're there to connect and that you're there to form a relationship with the student, even if it's only for one workshop, and that both the text and the writing, I wouldn't say they're merely conduits for relationship, but they're concurrent and equally important. So it's important that we're reading a text. It's important that we're doing creative writing. It's also very important that we're connecting with the students and showing compassion and empathy. And I think because we work with the groups we do, who are broadly speaking at-risk populations, our students are people who have encountered great pain or struggle or trauma, and people that have gone through that are often extremely sensitive and aware, and they can see through a lot of masks or falsity. They can kind of gauge the teacher or the teaching writer pretty soon, you know. So anybody that comes in and does programming in incarceration, I think our program and our teaching writers really go to great lengths to show compassion and care, and I think the students can feel that right off.
How has this work revealed the community to you in a way that you wouldn't have seen without it?
I guess I'm always wondering what people's stories are in a different way than I used to, because our students, in part, we know their story. And I think it causes me to see people differently, to feel more compassion, to be less quick to judge, less quick to think I know a person fully, to assume that I know them based on what they look like or what they're doing or what they said to me. I think I've tried to facilitate that in my life beforehand, but it's much more present now. And there's reasons that I do it now, which I didn't do before. And that's because I've experienced so many stories. I've been told so many stories by our students. Heartbreaking stuff. Stuff that I just didn't actually want to hear. I mean, I did because I wanted to care for the person. But man, some of it's heavy. And then some of it's just crazy. You know, some of it crazy in the sense of funny or lighthearted or you know, I can think of one student who wrote, and he's got a piece in the book, and he mentions the nickname that his mom used to call him. He mentions that in the piece, and it's Deedle Bug, and I had never heard that. It's just so funny, and it's so authentic and specific and to that person. It's just those moments are great too. We have we laugh a lot with the students, even students going through great pain and awaiting, let's say, for example, awaiting trial, and they're going to have some years coming down on them. They know that, and we're sitting in a classroom with them, and we get to have moments of laughter and real joy. And that just, I guess it's those moments that I'm just when that happens, I can't help but step back and self-reflect for a second. I was man, I'm very fortunate to be in here doing this.
Could I ask you to read from the book? If there's a particular poem or writing from one of the students.
I'll read two. And this one was written in this room. The two most common prompts that we've used that appear in our book are the Dear America prompt. The first time I used that prompt was the day after the 2016 election. And I walked into juvenile detention. And I brought in literature by Denise Levertov, James Baldwin, and Bob Dylan. I wanted to do something as an act of pushback. So that was that. The other prompt we've used a lot comes from the interaction between Walt Whitman and Langston Hughes, where Walt Whitman wrote his long magnum opus, Leaves of Grass, and inside that are pieces that talk about, I am America, and this is America, and I see America, and this is what I see, and he lists everything. When Langston Hughes came along in the 1920s and read that poem and didn't see himself in the poem, then he responds with a poem called I Too Am America, and he talks about his experience. So we often will get students to write an I Too poem where they're responding to where are you not represented in either of these visions of America? What's your story? So this comes from one of those prompts. It's called I Sing America in Hospital Beds. I too sing America in hospital beds, wires stuck to my skull with heavy glue, in an office checking yes to disability, clarifying, I have epilepsy, but they aren't listening after that. The I have, the yes. I too sing America. In my nightmares of fire and threats, the news eagerly shares. In school, working ahead because if the medicine fails, I can't take back the time. I too sing America. They hear epilepsy and pretend they can't hear me. So I read that because it was written in this room, and I think it's a powerful, powerful poem about a subject that I still can't think of a poem I know of that deals with that, the subject of epilepsy. The other poem that I'd read. So one of the things we do in our program is this idea of aftering other poems. And so we'll use a line from one poem and springboard into their own poems, or we'll take a mood from a piece. And this is something poets and writers and rappers and artists have been doing throughout the centuries, is this kind of common dialogue with other artists, with other writers. And so we're really on about that. And this, so at the bottom below the pieces of writing in the book, we'll put after this poet and this poem, or kind of explain it a little, just so it connects into that river of literature. And so this poem is called Dear America, and it was written in Skagit County Juvenile Detention by a student named Victor. It says at the bottom, written the day after the 2016 election in response to works by Bob Dylan, James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, and Denise Levertov. Dear America, you have the power to do whatever you want to do. I just want to let you know that whatever you do it on your own. One day, you're going to find out that everything that you're doing is not cool. Why do you care about the color of people? What does color do to you? I know that people mess up, but look at you.
When people read the book, is there something that you hope they take away from that? Either personally or with the idea of affecting this community?
A few things. One thing I hope that happens is that we really tried to structure the book to be a few things. One is, as one would imagine, an anthology of student writing that people can read and get to know. But also, I'd love for it to be a unit of both kind of a... I'm just thinking this now. The dimensions of the book are about 6x9, which is also... That's the dimension of a solitary confinement cell, roughly speaking, which is interesting. But I'm hoping that this 6x9 book will also be a package of instruction / inspiration, and that people in our community and beyond the community that pick it up, particularly if they're from outside here where there is nothing in their community like this, that it will inspire them to maybe do something like this. Not exactly, but something like this. A storytelling night regularly, or a writing program like this, or whatever, or a workshop that happens once every 3 months. So I really hope it'll inspire that kind of thing. In our own community, I hope that people read the book and read the writings in a way that causes them to pause, and in the best way possible, causes their hearts to break. I really do. Not to cause them pain, but that this idea of, like, when our hearts are broken, that's when space is created for other things to get in. If it's closed and whole and everything is fine, things can't get in our heart that way, you know? So when our heart is broken, that space is created, other things can get in. And I think that's where more empathy can come and more compassion can come, and they can view, even if they're outside this community, they can view their own community different, because guess what? People just like this, with these same issues and same traumas and same problems, live in your community wherever you are. That's how it is. I think the things that would mean most to me is if the students themselves are appreciated for their writing, if other things kind of are inspired out of it, and if Jane or John Doe Public treats other people in their community in a different way, in a better way, even if they weren't necessarily doing anything wrong, but in a better way, in a more proactive way, because of reading this book or a book like it even. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.